Hey guys, welcome to the first episode of Right Owl Politics, coming to you from Miami, Florida. So my name is Ariana Mendez, and let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a Cuban-American attorney from Florida and a Republican political activist. I have worked as a speechwriter and policy advisor in Republican campaigns on the state and local level. Because I'm an attorney, I'm going to throw in this disclaimer. Please don't interpret anything said on this show as legal advice. If you have a legal issue, go and consult with an attorney licensed in your jurisdiction. Nothing said in this podcast establishes an attorney-client relationship, okay? All right. So I decided to launch a podcast because I did not feel there was anything out there that covered political news from a conservative millennial perspective. Here at Right Owl Politics, we like to say, hey, we're not your dad's political news show. We own it. We embrace that. And we want to have kind of the real conversations about the issues that matter to you. And these are the conversations that you're having at your kitchen table, that you're having on the couch with your husband as you watch the afternoon news. Those are the conversations we're interested in. We're not interested in bland talking points. If you're looking for bland talking points, you need to go elsewhere. This is not the spot for you. Now, as you can imagine, launching a podcast is a lot of work. There's a lot of research. You talk to tons of people to get their opinion. You ask friends what they think. And some of my friends were like, you know, Ariana, I think this is a good idea, but I think the timing's off. You know, the whole world is upside down. Maybe wait on launching your podcast. And I was like, no, this is the perfect time. Look, there's a lot of misinformation right now going on. A lot of. And there's a lot of fear-mongering coming from the media. So right now, we actually need more rational voices in the political news space that kind of helps filter out that misinformation and that fear-mongering. Because if not, it's going to be very difficult to move forward if we're paralyzed by fear. So right now, our country is going through a very difficult period. And when I say that, that's an understatement. This virus has impacted our health, our economy, and our prospects for the future. And the answers to all these problems is not so cut and dry. And if anybody, either in front of a microphone or in front of a camera, tells you, I have the answers to these questions, they're lying to you. They don't. Nobody has seen anything like this before. So this is a moment where we are at a crossroads, where there's two paths in front of us. And it's actually a critical juncture because what we do now is going to affect what happens to our country down the road. Either we are courageous and we confront these problems and try to figure them out in a methodical and rational manner, or we're going to fall prey to fear. Those are the two options. There's like really no middle ground. And right now, there is this sense of anxiety and uncertainty about the future. Now, some of you may be familiar with Saul Alinsky. He's a liberal political activist and also a domestic terrorist, by the way. But he has this quote that has been circulating in political circles for a long time. And this quote says, never let a crisis go to waste. And I don't endorse anything this man says or does, but let's deep dive into that concept. When things go bad, when there is this, you know, melting point, that does provide an opportunity. And it would be, you know, kind of obtuse from our perspective not to take advantage of this opportunity. This is an opportunity to look at ourselves, our family, our states, our country, and say, hey, that's working, that's not working. And understanding that there's an opportunity in all this mess gives us hope, because we need hope right now. And this is the time to start having difficult conversations with ourselves. Is there something I need to change in myself? Is there a different career I want to pursue? Do I want to go back to school? Within our family, is everything working as it should? Is there something we need to reevaluate? With our elected officials, are these the right people to be leading our county, our state, our country? These are questions you need to ask. And this is the time to do it. Because when things are great, everybody's great, everybody's happy. But when things start to go for the worst, this is where the character of each individual flourishes or, you know, kind of wilts and goes away. This is where you see the difference. And this is the time for us to evaluate and say, look, I want to do this for myself. I want my state to do this. And I want my country to go in this direction. But we, the people, we have to push them. We have to set the example. Because if not, you're going to have leadership that's not going to be in sync with your objectives. So, for those of you listening from the future, hey, what's up? As this episode is being recorded in late April 2020, states like Alabama, Georgia, Montana, Tennessee, and Texas have taken steps to reopen their economies. We're in Florida, so effective May 4th, most of Florida is going to move into what they call phase one of the reopening process. Now, this phase one is not going to include Miami-Dade, Broward, or Palm Beach County. If you guys are familiar with Florida, you know that these three counties represent the most populous areas of the Sunshine State. Our show is recorded in Miami, so that means we're still in the pre-phase one phase. Look, this goes without saying, and I know I speak for many of you out there. I am so grateful, and I thank God every day, that everybody in our family and in our friend circle is safe and healthy. And I know there's a lot of people out there that cannot say the same thing. So, with that said, I'm going to be a bit frivolous and superficial right now. I can't do this lockdown anymore. I've had it. I'm done. Fatigue, whatever you want to call it. I can't clean the house anymore. I don't have any more laundry to wash. I can't watch more Netflix. I've reached my limit with Netflix. Look, this is bad. I binge watched the entire Walking Dead series on Netflix. That's a lot of episodes. That's a lot of hours. So, hey, if the zombie apocalypse comes, I know everything that needs to be done. So I'm your girl. I don't think that's very useful, but that's how I've invested my downtime. The other issue is the fridge. I think the fridge and I have come to an understanding that we need to social distance from ourselves. So yeah, there's that too. Okay, guys, that's my last dad joke of the day. All right. And finally, to my lady listeners, I know you can connect to this. I need to go to the hair salon. I need to get my nails done. Like, I'm starting to look like a gremlin and not the cute type. You know what I mean. So, since this is our first episode, let me give you a quick overview of how the episodes are going to run. Every week, there will be a new episode. Each week, we will discuss, you know, the news of the week. And from that, we're going to have a discussion with one of our guests. So for today, we're going to discuss COVID-19 on the personal, community, and political level. So without further ado, let's jump right in. For today's episode, we have our guest, Chris Alvarez. Chris is a former staff sergeant with the United States Air Force and currently works as a program manager with a business intelligence company. He is also my favorite debate partner. We've had some epic discussions while on date night, on road trips, or just chilling on the couch. We've been married for 4 years, and there's never a day where we don't have a great discussion on politics, religion, you name it. But hey, I could be a bit biased. Fun fact, Chris and I met at a Lincoln Day dinner in Miami back in 2014. Republican Senator Ted Cruz was the keynote speaker. I guess you can say Senator Ted Cruz brought us together. Thanks, Ted. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show. So right before this, we decided to do our afternoon walk. And we're not the only people that have this idea, so our neighborhood becomes crowded. It's like the new rush hour. 5 o'clock hits, everybody logs off their laptop, goes walking around the neighborhood. Lots of kids playing on the street, no face masks to be found, and people are not really maintaining social distancing. Is this the reason why some people are against loosening the restrictions? Because people can't even follow the guidelines now while they're in place? What do you think?
So we have to look at, okay, what is our actual threat? And I think that's the thing is, it's not just people being stupid. It's not just, I don't care what the news says. I don't care what my government official says. Every human being is doing their own risk assessment. How many people have COVID inside of our neighborhood? As far as we know, probably zero. So my risk assessment is if I go and kiss the cheek of every person in my neighborhood, I'm probably not going to get COVID. I might get something else, but I'm not going to get COVID. So I still want to maintain social distancing. I stay 6 feet away from anyone not part of my household. People make individual decisions. The issue comes in when someone makes a different decision. And that's where we're getting these protests and where we get the behavior that's different than what we expect. Is at what point do you have the human right to do what's not advisable? Something essentially stupid.
So that's an interesting concept. So at one point, people just need to accept the risk. It's a possibility that you may or may not get it. And that's just something you have to accept. But here's the concern. You have the images. Let's take California, for example. They opened up the beaches. People crowded the beaches immediately. Here in Florida, you had images of people also crowding the beaches as well. Like, people seem to have, okay, we're going to loosen here. That seems to be enough of a magnet that they're going to crowd in there. And I get it. Not everybody can social distance. If you've been quarantining or being on lockdown with your spouse or your children, it's ridiculous to expect that now when you're out and about, you'll be social distancing from them. Whatever they have, you got. I think everybody's on the same page with that. But I think the optics, like, we need, there are people that say, hey, if the population can't even handle this little bit of loosening, if we remove the restrictions completely, even if it's gradual, everything is going to go to hell because people just don't know how to follow the rules.
No, actually, you are creating the issue. This is the problem with central planning. So here's what's going to happen. If you clamp down and say, okay, I'm going to loosen up in this one spot, everyone goes to that one spot. Now, if you actually just say, hey, go ahead and start living your life, and I don't care if it's the beach or the mall or whatever, please social distance, but I'm going to stop using the force of law to shut things down, then you get to a point of people will disperse. When you say, the only acceptable way you can leave your house is to go to this park, guess what? A million people are going to go to that park, and now you've got a million cases of COVID. So you're creating the issue by only saying, well, these certain spots are government approved.
And to be fair, immediately when it was announced that they were opening some parks in Miami-Dade, I did tell you I wanted to go to the park. So I am one of those people that wants to go and crowd those newly opened public spaces. So I get that. And we've been on lockdown.
And I insisted on not doing it because I knew that was going to happen.
Hey, I have cabin fever, okay? I need to get out. But it's actually quite interesting because I think people are aware that there's a risk of getting sick. I think nobody is out there and say, hey, I want to get COVID. What becomes interesting is that there seems to be this mentality by some people, some policymakers, specifically on the left, that the population can't govern themselves. You've given them this toolbox of all this information. This is what COVID-19 is. These are the symptoms. This is what can happen to you if you have underlying conditions. It could have a very dramatic ending. So I think people are aware what could happen, yet there are certain people on the left, Democrats, especially in blue states, that they want total control, total lockdown. They don't care how many jobs are lost. They don't care how many lives are ruined during the process. And let me be clear, so if there's some liberal listening to this, every life is precious. Every life lost is too many. With that said, at some point, we need to move forward as a country. We can't continue in this limbo of we're locked down in our houses with our doors shut, our shades drawn, and we're not coming out. That's not sustainable. Eventually, every company, even the most accommodating that are allowing you to work from home, they can't sustain that, especially if they're customer service focused, if they need to produce a product. Like all these luxury leather goods stores like Coach and Kate Spade and all of that, they need to sell those products. They can't just have those associates, those managers working at home, cashing a paycheck every 2 weeks.
So when you're talking about every life lost, every life is precious. Every life lost is a tragedy. And that loss of life is tragic, whether it's COVID or something else. And guess what? These restrictions are going to lead to other losses of life. These things get brought up about suicide and other stuff like that. There are health ramifications to forcing people to being idle, to not being able to engage in the activities that they use to de-stress, to move, to exercise, all this stuff. People might not be getting the vitamin D that they need. We are causing extreme health ramifications. And then we're also then causing an issue of people are going to start getting COVID. How? Because at some point, we as human beings, and especially as Americans, are going to just start breaking all these rules. We're going to stop caring. It's going to turn into anarchy because the rules are not reasonable. So people just do what they're going to do.
So let's go down the rabbit hole for a minute. What is it conceivable that there are some people currently in power that like this kind of total control over the population? That they understand there's a health emergency going on, but they like to do this type of social experiment of what happens when you have this amount of control over the population and for how long can it be maintained? And also, I think it's also to encourage a dependency on government. The more weeks and months that you are on unemployment and that you're receiving a check from the government makes the argument that the government is here for you and is here to help. Which is antithetical to kind of the American dream, which is self-reliance and you making your own way out in the world. And this whole situation, as unfortunate as it has been, has put people in peril of falling prey to that argument.
Well, there was an interesting meme recently. I think it was actually even an Onion article with China's Xi Jinping praising the governor of Michigan for such powerful moves of authoritarianism.
This was an Onion article, you said?
It was Onion, Babylon Bee, one of those.
Okay.
So it's satire, but it does point to, wow, that is a huge concern. So I'm not a big fan of conspiracy theories because then people just think you're nuts. It's just more of... do they enjoy the control? Kinda. I mean, that's the thing that you do see with kind of the modern day left is they do enjoy authority. And they feel like that is the right course of action. So for any given problem, they want to use the absolute power of government rather than any kind of social or private means. So a lot of left-leaning people are screaming at the president because he wasn't using the War Power Act more. He wasn't wielding it like a huge sledgehammer. He was asking people nicely and only using the sledgehammer when necessary and creating a lot of public-private partnerships, voluntary ones. You get better results that way. But leftists are like, no, you have to... These people are only evil. And you have to use some sort of force, a threat of violence, to deal with these evil capitalists.
Just for clarification, I think you meant the Defense Production Act, right?
Whatever act it is.
Okay. You mentioned President Trump, and that is a whole bag of worms. So he was getting a lot of criticism for his 2-hour-long press conferences where he was, you know, taking the media, holding them accountable. And honestly, though, it comes to a point in time, he can give you all these stats, he can give you all this information on what he's doing, what he's trying to do, what he's trying to partner with the private sector to do, but it doesn't seem to ever be enough. The media is never satisfied, and the expectation is that somehow he could have prevented this. There seems to be no kind of understanding that he's reacting to a situation that was coming outside of the United States. And it's frustrating because as people that are trying to solve a problem, if you don't even have goodwill from the media that's covering your progress, it's very difficult to convey to the people, hey, progress is being done. Because it's always coming from the perspective of more can be done. And I get it, because when lives are on the line, it's important to always emphasize that more can be done. But we also need to give recognition for what has been done. And the numbers of infection and the numbers of deaths are dramatically lower than what the president was originally briefed on by the experts. And that's kudos to the American people that we've been able to, you know, follow the guidelines, be on our best behavior. And kudos also to him and what he's done to be able to provide the necessary tools in case the hospital system is put pressured on. So it's unfortunate that the media is always coming at it from more could be done. But can you even acknowledge what has been done?
So I always like to, as much as I hate the source, I always like the quote about big minds talk about ideas, small minds talk about people. So the obsession with Donald Trump, whether you hate him or love him, I think is, it's misguided. We have a really good team, and this is where you can talk, if you really want to look at people, look at Fauci, look at Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, and all of them. Look at the organizations and what is the private sector doing to help. Because the thing that gets entertaining with this current administration, and particularly with Donald Trump himself, is it's really entertaining to watch him go head-to-head against the media, because the media has kind of turned into a bad actor on its own. So one of the things that I'm very much enjoying about, without regards to even thinking about Donald Trump himself, what I like about this administration is making people question both their media and their federal government. I think a lot of liberals got comfortable with Obama being able to do whatever he wants, and Trump coming in makes them poop themselves just a little bit to say, oh, hey, maybe the federal government shouldn't have that power. And in the same case, I think more and more people are waking up to there's something wrong with the media. It's not that we don't need a media. Please, we need a media. But we need a media that's just a little bit more honest. What happened to this journalistic integrity? The thing is I understand they're not, you're never going to remove all bias, but now the bias is so thick, and on both sides. I mean, you do have a few right-leaning ones that go way too far as well, but the bias is enormous, and the entire media needs to be called out.
And I think that's an interesting discussion, and you see it, that objective reportings, coverage that should be neutral, often has an inclination, a bias, a tone. Because it's not even just the words that are used, it's the way it's presented. So I think that that is a huge credibility problem that the media needs to address. Because look what is happening to print media in this country. It's almost an archaic relic at this point. Newspapers are losing money, are laying off reporters, and their opinion pieces, departments are being shut down because they can't sustain this. There's not an appetite for that type of news. People just want straight news. Give me the news. What's happening? I don't want it editorializing. If I want the editorializing, you'll listen to a podcast like this and listen to other people's opinions. But the media has gotten used to being able to present objective facts, but and in saying they're objective facts when in really they're just their opinion.
So the most valuable media, and the ones that I think are gaining the most traction nowadays, are the ones that know and honestly tell you this is a fact, this is opinion. So, you know, the fact is it's this many, it's like one or two out of 1,000 people are getting COVID. And so when we start looking at these stats, that's where it gets interesting into how the media can be honest and dishonest at the same time. They can tell you the truth in a very deceitful way. If you look at raw numbers, the United States of America has more COVID cases and more deaths than anyone else in the world, and possibly almost all the world combined, as far as what's being reported, because we can't count China. So if you look at raw numbers, yes, but then you start looking at, well, what's really statistically relevant? Well, it's a percentage. Well, look at our percentage versus the percentage in Italy or the percentage in Spain. And you're going to see that our percentage is lower, even with New York. Now you take a look at New York and you say, okay, we're going to segregate New York because it's a special case. It's an outlier. Statistically, it's an outlier. Okay, we look at that. We care about New York. We care about everything that's going on there. Now, we segregate them. We take care of the issues specifically in New York, and that's a special case. But North Carolina, they're doing okay. Florida, most of Florida is doing okay. Now they've decided they're going to open up Florida except for South Florida because you know, forget Miami. But there is an interesting thing where, you know, in our case, it's probably some of it's cultural. We don't have the biggest rule abiders, and we have a huge population. But we still don't even have the issue that New York has. So that's not New York's fault. That's just how New York exists. They're a huge city with people stacked on top of each other. That's what's going to happen. So treat it as an outlier. Send the ship. Build an extra hospital. All the things the federal government has been doing. Everyone else, hey, we've got guidelines. And I think that's one of the big things that's causing the protests is it's one thing if you give me a guideline and I have the choice to obey it because I obey them. I obey the guidelines. But I also have an inherent human right to not, to say, you know what? I am measuring the risk and I have made a decision based off of my risk analysis, even if it's faulty. I have a right to do that.
So two things. First off, here in Florida, I want to give recognition to Governor Ron DeSantis. I think he did a fabulous job of tailoring our response to COVID-19 to the needs of Florida. Every area, every region in Florida is different. Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County have the largest amount of cases. And accordingly, there were more restrictions in place here. And as we enter phase one of the reopening of the Florida economy, those counties are the exception and are still not in phase one because the numbers still need to go down in order for that to happen. But he takes. Sure.
So you're saying that they have a higher number or a higher percentage? Because, of course, those are the highest populations in Florida, except for, say, the Tampa area and Orlando.
Both. They have higher numbers and higher percentages of the population.
So when we start looking at this area has a higher percentage, a per capita, and it's significantly higher, that's when we start saying, okay, hey, in this area, I don't really recommend you just start gallivanting.
And that's a smart approach, and it's a tailored approach, and it's a common sense approach. And I really appreciate that because we're not Michigan, where everything is shut down, where you can't even buy a bouquet of flowers because the governor says you can't. So I
Or seeds,
yes, which makes no sense. But that's a separate tangent. But Governor DeSantis has done a great job, and I think that he will continue to push gradually towards full opening of the Florida economy, and hopefully, we can go back to Disney World soon, Chris. That would be nice.
Meh. So I don't celebrate the individual, but I think if you just look at Florida and how it inherently is, I mean, yes, we have Florida Man, and that's an endless source of entertainment.
What's Florida Man? Tell our listeners if they're not familiar.
Oh my goodness. It's a meme. And I'd be shocked if you don't know, just Google it. Just type in Florida Man and you'll see very quickly why Florida Man is a meme. At least one of my favorite media to consume is called Bad News Network. Because of course I've got to support my fellow veterans. So they do their news program and I definitely enjoy that. And they always end with a humorous story from Florida Man. So yes, in Florida we have Florida Man, but we also have that because of the liberty that we have here. We have a lot more space. We have big cities that still have liberty. So it is a great state to live in, and sure, you're going to have some issues in your extremely dense areas, but we have opportunity, we have things going well in our state, not because of one man. It doesn't matter if it's Rick Scott, DeSantis, or who's that guy that lost Christie, mm-hmm. Something like that. Doesn't matter who that person is. I think we have a great state that would have done great regardless. And we just didn't need a Gestapo stepping in with the jackboots trying to take away our liberty.
See, I disagree. I like to give recognition when leadership really comes up and really does their job right. And in this case, I think Governor DeSantis has done his job and has been competent doing that job. So I like to give recognition where recognition is. And I think leadership matters. And we've seen it. Each state has had a different approach to this. And this is where the individual governor's leadership comes into play. But yeah, we're a great state here in Florida. So I think we do a good job, even though we do have the Florida man meme, which is unfortunate.
Well, the Florida man meme comes from Sunshine Laws. We actually have a more liberalized in a good way, media, and we have certain things that just make it so that you're allowed to know. So instead of burying it like other states do, we tell you, you can factually know about what happens in Florida. Other states, you don't have that liberty. So what are the other states doing to get on our level, to be honest and to be able to have that introspection?
You know, there's an expression that each of the states is a laboratory of democracy. And in this COVID-19 crisis, you really see which ones get it and which ones don't. So it's been an interesting contrast. Every state is different. Every leader is different. And
other people get different messages, too. That's one of the things you're getting here is what happens when some of these Democrats get power. As soon as they can, they grab as hard as they can. You give them an inch, they take a mile, and then they pull the guns out and say, if you want an inch back of the mile I took, go pound sand or I will arrest you. And they are arresting people. They are arresting people for their inalienable human rights as enumerated by the Bill of Rights. All of your First Amendment has been thrown to the wayside because these people have taken full control, full power. And so we have to be careful about this. That's the concern you have with some members of the left.
Well, didn't you hear what happened in Virginia? The governor announced he was extending the stay-at-home order into May. People were protesting. They were on the sidewalk across the street from the governor's mansion, and they were arrested. So we even
can look in our own backyard, and I believe it was Palm Beach, where we arrested a pastor for having a sermon. People were willingly in a church. Now, I'm not going to go into a church. I'm not going to go into any large event because I understand the risk. But other people can make that decision to say, I want to go to church. And if they make that decision, they have the human right to, First Amendment. And yet, here we are sending police officers like we're Cuba to the churches. And remember, this is something that maybe you don't know. In Cuba, they would send the jackbooted thugs to the church, and you're lucky if all they did was stare meanly at you and remember you as an enemy of the state because you went to church. But they probably would trip you or engage in some sort of abuse because you went to church in a communist state. So now you need to think about it. Are we in a communist state?
And that's something to think about, you know, empty shelves of the grocery stores, lines to get into the grocery store, being locked up in your house and not being allowed to leave. That's pretty much communism right there.
And checks from the government.
Oh, yeah. Checks from the government. So, yeah, I really don't like this 6-week experiment with socialism / communism. I do not buy in. You're a libertarian. You would describe yourself as such.
Sure.
Chris, so our show is, you know, we come at it from a millennial perspective. And I was wondering, what does being a libertarian mean to you in 2020?
In 2020?
Yeah.
Is same as it always is. You're trying to protect your liberties. So one of the hard things is freedom means the freedom to do something stupid. Sometimes it's also the freedom to be an asshole. My rights end when yours begin. So I can't punch you in the face. Now, here's the problem, though. We start getting into how do you deal with that in a disease? And I understand that that is very complicated. I understand where people are saying, yeah, I want you to have your inalienable human rights, but what if your human rights gets me sick and then gets my grandmother sick? And she, you know, she's one of those people that's a high risk factor, and you're gonna put her life in danger because of your liberty? So it gets harder. It gets to a point where, yes, you really want to protect human life, but you also have to remember, is human life worth it if you have given up all your liberty? So, I mean, this is where our founding fathers started talking about give me liberty or give me death. This is where people have to make that choice. And I'm hoping people start showing up at the polls, and anyone who acted like a Gestapo, let's get them out of office. This is one of those things where even DeSantis is, I'll tolerate him. He did an okay job. He did still use the force of state, which I don't like, but I found it tolerable compared to, say, Michigan. Please, for all that is good, get rid of that governor. Get rid of the governor of Virginia. California, you're already a lost cause. You've been wanting communism for a while. I hope you enjoy it. When you don't, I don't know how much I can feel sorry for you.
Don't you feel bad for them? We were born in California, our home state. Sad face.
Sure. I can feel bad for them the same way that our parents feel bad for the Cubans that didn't make it off the island and are still living in communism. At some point, you hope that they can escape. Hopefully they can make the personal choices and also escape, you know, these communist hellholes. But it just gets to a point of that place is bad. And both of these are beautiful places, by the way. Every story I've heard of Cuba is beautiful. I remember California quite fondly for its weather. Not for its politics, but its weather is magnificent.
Mountains. Beautiful.
Well, you can live in a spot and have the mountains, the beach, the desert, and any environment you want within an hour. It's a beautiful state that then got polluted. And you take out the Gestapo, I'd love to live there again. But until then, I'm here in a hot and humid place because at least there I'm free.
And you're close to Disney World, which is a major plus for me.
Sure.
I'm a big Disney fan. So, how do you think this is going to affect the politics of November?
I don't know if people like the communism. The problem is the media keeps feeding them that your Gestapo did not march hard enough. The big back black boot stomping on your face didn't stomp hard enough. And please make sure you get a stronger Gestapo next year is the message you're going to get from your media. So I hope people get the message of, I did not like this. I did not like the way my government reacted. And I want to let them know that, no, next time inform me, but do not take away my liberties. Do not arrest my priests. Do not arrest protesters that are calling the government out on its BS.
You know, it's interesting because you talked about the media telling you that not enough was done. And unfortunately, it's very hard to measure the lives saved. It's going to be the argument. It's going to be the president didn't do enough. The president didn't do X. The president didn't do Y. And I think that's going to be the talking points from Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic nominee. And I especially think that his absence for the majority of this, because he hasn't been visible during this whole crisis, and I think that he's going to have to play catch up and provide an alternative vision of what he would have done, because we really didn't see anything viable from him.
So one of the things that gets difficult with this is not just that you don't know how many lives were not lost because of this. You also don't know how many lives will not be lost because of the continued economic strain. Because at some point, people are going to starve, they're going to become suicidal, they're going, not suicidal just because, I can't work. So that's one of the things that I think we need to dispel from the left. It's not, because I can't work, because I can't be a part of the capitalist machine, I'm going to commit suicide. No. You have to understand that some people have vitamin D needs, they have exercise needs, they have a need to go outside, to be outside, and we are taking away their very reason for living. And it doesn't have to be work. It could simply be we're just taking away their hobbies and ruining their livelihood in other ways. And at some point, you do get depressed. It's something we got briefed on when I was stationed out in Alaska. As soon as you land out there, the first thing the military is briefing you on is SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And it's because in Alaska, when you only get 1 hour of sunlight a day, if you're not out and you don't get that 1 hour of sunlight, you will be affected by the lack of sunlight. It affects everyone. I like to be indoors 99% of the time. Even I would notice a difference after a month of never seeing the sun, to the point that I would just make it a point to get up and I would walk in 0 degree weather from my work to the chow hall, just so I could get a little bit of sunlight. Because this affects human beings. You as a human being need at least a little bit, not a lot, just a little bit of sun exposure. So when we take sun exposure, exercise, all these things that your body needs, guess what? Physiologically, you're going to get depressed, you're going to get lethargic, it's going to affect you. You might either die of a heart attack or commit suicide. So what are we doing? What are we thinking about as far as health?
And I think that's why there's been a movement, you know, hashtag in this together, try to create a community even from a distance. But I think that still doesn't fill the need that's there. People need social interaction. People need to kind of have a routine. We can try to have routines at home, but you know, there was a pace of life that we were used to. And all of a sudden, from one day to another, pause. And there's an adjustment period to that.
Pause with the force of government. That's the problem.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people were not prepared. But I think there's an opportunity here. I think there's an opportunity here for this forced pause. We can reflect, but we also have a responsibility because we now have more time to reflect. We are at a crossroads. We are going to have to decide where the country is going to go. Are we going to work towards a reopening, or getting our economy back on track? Or are we going to continue to allow fear to dominate and allow our rights to be slowly chipped away with every new guidance and restriction placed by local governments?
Turning us into 1984.
Yes. And look, I don't want to dismiss this. COVID-19 is a serious issue. It's a serious illness. Everybody needs to follow the guidelines and follow your local advisories. I don't want to make sure that is clear. I want to make sure that it's clear to everybody listening.
And we follow those guidelines. Absolutely. That's one of the things. We 100%, all you have to do is tell me the facts, and I've already made it a point to follow all of the guidelines. Now, all I'm saying is you don't have to point a gun at me.
And I think that's where we're both arguing, that there is a choice, and that choice is very valuable. And you having the right to make that decision and making an educated decision. Look, the vaccine is still months, if not a year away. And we need to come to terms with, we're going to have a new normal. These social distancing guidelines, this is going to become the new normal. And acknowledging that, understanding that, it's part of the process. But with that said, life must go on. We need to go back to work. Businesses need to open up. If not, we're going to kill this economy and it's not going to come back. This is going to be worse than the Great Depression. So being smart, taking a step-by-step approach, I think we can get America back to work. And this is not about an election. This is not about Donald Trump winning re-election. This is about us as a country being able to continue onward and not fall prey to fear. Well, thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming. Our first guest on the podcast. Love you. Thanks for being here. And I'll be right back. Hey guys, before we sign off, I have some really important shout outs to do. First off, I want to do a shout out for my parents, Nestor and Andrea Mendez. My parents were courageous enough to leave communist Cuba and forge for themselves a new life here in the United States. And from the moment that I could talk, they have been telling me about how grateful we should be to have the freedom that we have in this country and how it's always one generation away from being taken away. So thank you, Mom and Dad, for everything. Thank you for teaching me to love this country and to love freedom. And And I want to dedicate this first episode to you. I also want to do another shout out to Mike Essen from the Mike Essen Radio Show. Thanks, Mike, for inviting me to your program on May 15th. Mike has great content over there. He has had some awesome guests like Senator Marco Rubio and some other big wigs. So if you have some time, check out his show. It's the Mike Essen Radio Show. Also, another shout out for Gina Sosa. She's been liking and sharing all the social media content related to this podcast. So thank you for your support, Gina. Fun fact, Gina and I go way back. I was her speechwriter when she ran for Congress a few years ago. So she's a great person and it's a pleasure to work with her, and I consider her a friend. So thanks, Gina, for your support. And finally, I would like to give a big virtual hug to Yesenia Escobedo. Yesenia is a law school friend and she's been very supportive of this podcast, very enthusiastic about this project, always willing to listen to concept ideas and very encouraging. So thank you, Yesenia, for all your help, for all your positive thoughts, and I really appreciate it. So guys, that wraps up our episode for this week. We'll be back next week to take on another topic. If you want to get a shout out on next week's episode, go to anchor.fm/Right Owl Politics. Click on the message icon, leave a message, and we'll give you a shout out next week. Thanks for listening. Spread the word out. We're now your dad's political news show, so let everybody know. Thanks for listening. This has been Right Owl Politics.